From St. Pete Catalyst, another Pitch List Startup Report. Now from the Catalyst Studios, here is Catalyst publisher Joe Hamilton.
Joining me on Startup Report today is Tom Whitmore, the CEO and founder of Sage Legion. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's get warmed up with a little background. You just moved here from San Fran a few months ago.
Yes.
What were you doing there and how did you find your way to this complete opposite side of the country?
So for the last 10 years, I was a healthcare IT executive at Kaiser Permanente. And in that role, I managed shared services analytics and corporate IT functions. And then I'm also a data mining instructor at the University of California. Mm-hmm. I supported thousands of analysts, lots and lots of information consumers out of data warehousing, big data lakes, all the tools. And there's a lot of great things happening in the innovation space here. And there's tremendous talent shortages. And there is a real lack of ability to collaborate. It's to me, it is one of these you can't get there from here situations in terms of clouds having tremendous innovation. They want people to adopt their capabilities, which are just unbelievable.
Right.
And then, you know, data explosion. And then related to the talent, you know, there was 20,000 LinkedIn listings for data scientists in December of last year. Now there's 25,000. Mm. And so, you know, what Sage Legion was created for, and I designed this on my own. I funded it on my own. And I came here to St. Petersburg to run it and energize a sales and marketing function and a leadership team because, you know, we have to find new ways for people to work together. Mm-hmm. There's, I don't want to exactly call it re-engineering because what's also built into the platform are capabilities to help organizations transform. It's designed for enterprises, chief analytics officers, chief data officers, and analytics executives, but also for what I call smart business people. I mean, they know their business right. in enterprises, and they are all talking about, you know, whatever digital transformation means for them. You know, maybe more personalization with consumers, you know, better operational reports. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, in all the research that I've recently looked into and with Gartner and my own experiences, you know, something like 85% of big data projects fail. And now what people are experiencing on the machine learning and artificial intelligence side is, you know, 8 out of 10 of those are struggling because of like data quality issues or inadequate training data or, you know, things of this nature. So
people are getting the theory right, but they're just not getting the execution correct.
Yes. And operationalizing things. And
so let's back up. You hit a lot of stuff there. Yeah. First, you know, it's, you mentioned talent and obviously working in the university scene, you had your finger on the pulse of talent and then you saw the quality of the folks that you were able to get to bring into Kaiser. You know, what sort of was when you were in years 8, 9, and 10 at Kaiser, what was the problem that was, you know, biting at you that made you say, I need to go start this?
Yeah. You know, I think a pretty traditional setup and which was not, you know, just a Kaiser setup, you know, tremendous investment in on-prem systems, transactional systems, big data lakes, data warehouses. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then a tremendous amount of tools, you know, visualization tools and other types of tools, data cleansing tools, ETL tools. And then, you know, a real desire to be able to consume the analytics, externalized algorithms and, you know, and not just, and when I talk about the big cloud vendors, I'm talking about Salesforce and Oracle and AWS and Microsoft, you know, those guys. But there's a lot of really boutique algorithm companies out there too that have specialized algorithms by different industries. And so, you know, what enterprises are being faced with right now is, you know, many of them have or are hiring chief analytics officers and they are being tasked with align the data and analytics strategy with business strategy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so that's like a big charter, big mandate.
Right.
And so we've got a lot of data, transactional data. We want to, I don't want to say monetize, but we want to certainly gain business value out of it and competitive advantage. And okay, so how do we do, you know, things like data gravity? We've got data here, we've got data there. And I'm just using a simple example here where you might have just a single strategic relationship with one cloud, but most enterprises might have two, three, or they might want to consume or do cloud switching. You know, maybe I've got my strategic relationship with IBM and my on-prem stuff, but you know, maybe I want to monitor the competition or compare some new innovation, or I want to consume it. There's no good way to collaborate with your strategic partners or just, you know, a citizen data scientist. So that's what Sage Legion does. It enables, you know, it enables this collaboration to take place across the spectrum. You don't have to do these types of collaborations. If you, you know, if you're totally great with your own internal team, fine. You know, that's not an issue.
How would then Sage Legion, if they weren't using it as a bridge or as an aggregator, you know, to sort of, I guess, normalize the communication between these different sets of data or providers of data.
Yes. Yeah.
So then what would it do then as a standalone if they were just using the one data?
Sure. So, I mean, it sounds kind of fundamental and basic, but like organizing problems, okay, just a fundamental business thing. And sometimes the organization of problems is as much focused on what are the questions we're trying to answer.
Right.
So the platform allows you to set up a structured hierarchy of your hypotheses about a particular area of inquiry and different projects and the questions.
Right.
And that is in like the domain language of your industry. If you're in manufacturing, if you're in transportation, if you're in financial services or healthcare,
right.
You know, whatever that is, you know, what makes sense to the business user. And then, you know, fundamentally around that structure, you can organize your internal teams. You can associate data or data access instructions or links to services such as Dropbox or Google, you know, Drive, things like that, or internal virtualization. Or and also you can associate data artifacts, which is all the supporting things like metadata, emails, other things that go along with that particular problem. You can also associate status. So this is really targeted towards the senior executives and CAOs who are, you know, who are saying things to us like, well, it takes me like, I don't understand even my own portfolio. What is the status of our analytics portfolio? And in terms of its progress, do we have the data? Is it cleansed? Are we ready to do machine learning on it? You know, and are we ready to deploy it? So these types of, these are fundamental things people are dealing with.
That's a lot though. That's you're looking at a trying to articulate the, you know, make sure the right questions are being asked and making sure that all the different stakeholders can actually access that and be able to participate in asking those questions in a way that they can understand. B, you've got a project management tool. And then, you know, and then C, you've got pretty much, you know, a decent tech challenge in the aggregation of the different data sources so that they can work together through this. So it's rather ambitious.
It is. And by the way, the platform works. It's operational.
Yeah.
I designed it. It's functional. And, you know, kind of two other aspects of the platform is, you know, you have to lead from where you are.
Right.
So, you know, enterprises have cultures and they have their own data mining and data machine learning processes, and they do what they do and they have their own contracting processes. So this was designed specifically to like be where you are, start from where you are, including, you know, it's designed to take the friction out of engagement.
Right.
So when you're looking at your reality and you're saying, okay, can we do something better, different?
Right.
Then you can also, when you want to, from the same problem structure, you can migrate to different levels of crowdsourcing. So you can engage your strategic vendors, who everybody who's a big enterprise already has. And, you know, so these are big consulting firms, offshore vendors, other boutique firms that you might have, because you're out of energy related to your own staff or skills. And then if you want to optimize some other things, like say there's certain tasks in a analytics process that might be you want to commoditize. Okay, you don't want to pay a lot of money for them. I'm going to say maybe standardization of data or something. You can. There's plenty of people who are all around the world, citizen data scientists, that are available to perhaps auction off problems.
Right.
And you can general contract an analytic problem into multiple projects. Last thing I'll mention is it's got a performance management capability in it. So this is an analyst-friendly tool. Right. It's designed for enterprises and it's designed for analysts. So you got to take care of your analyst teams. So they want to be better. They want to get better. So it has a variety of rating systems built into it and performance measurement to help them with like their career paths and stuff.
Right.
And so I'll just give you a few. I've been running sponsored auctions on the platform. Just to give you a few examples. I did my genome at 23andMe. Mm-hmm. I also downloaded 10 years of my medical records. Mm-hmm. And because I wanted to get some analysis written by some genomic experts. I did a rent or buy analysis for San Francisco Housing, which is where I came from. I just moved here 6 months mm-hmm. ago. And by neighborhood, and these were won by citizen data scientists in Spain and India, who did a fantastic job for reasonable pricing. And then some other auctions I've been running are related to like actuarial type of things, like long-term care insurance analysis, or I'm doing a flood zone analysis right now. I'm moving east, and I'm doing some environmental kind of auctioning. So all businesses and actually individuals too, they have these type of things people want to know.
Sure. And so does that mean at some point there you build a marketplace for these?
It is a marketplace too.
Already, so you have an external facing marketplace.
Yes.
People can come and compete for these jobs.
Yes.
And how do you handle the permissioning structure as far as when you start to work with A, random people,
yep.
and B, even partners or vendors that, you know, they get some access, but not all the access.
Right.
So what's the sort of user experience with that?
Yes. So the problem owners, they own the problem and they own the data. And there's a variety of techniques, I'll say, that are built into the system. You don't have to put any data in the system. You can, but you do not have to. So you can put a data instruction there.
Okay.
So if you're one of my strategic vendors, and I decide to, you know, you write me a proposal on something I'm putting out there for review, and you win, then, you know, it can be as simple as, well, this particular data set is on my prem. So here's instructions for contacting the system administrator for accessing that data.
Right.
as a technique. There's other, you know, this is hosted on Amazon Web Services, so it takes account of the security provisions there. But you know, once again, enterprises have a lot of different opinions about security.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of different opinions about contracting. And I mean, this is what I used to do at Kaiser, is deal with corporate technology, corporate systems. And so the idea was to also design a platform that coexists really nicely at an executive level
mm-hmm.
with other things that are there. They're complicated environments.
And a lot of times when you're opening up a marketplace like that, are you dealing with the payments as well?
No.
So that is not the model. Separately.
Well, the way we're selling this is, first off, there's a lot of features here.
Right.
Okay. And, you know,
I agree with that.
A lot of features, a lot of capabilities. And, because that's where I come from.
And
you know, people, they, at this level, they need a lot of things. And
yep.
these are complicated environments too. And so what we didn't want to do was design something where you and I are transacting and now the platform is taking a piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
As a business model.
Right.
I don't think that we're working to build a network of stakeholders
right.
that completely changes the way people engage with each other.
Right.
So from the enterprise standpoint, we are doing 30-day or less pilots,
mm-hmm.
okay, at a very reasonable consulting cost.
Mm-hmm.
And when people actually see their own data and problems in the system, they absolutely get it right away.
Right.
Okay. It becomes very familiar to them. And then we also don't want to disintermediate between them and the people who might be doing the work if they do external things.
Right.
And so they can engage. People have their own contracting processes too. So after we do the pilots for people and they see that, we'll engage their partners for them who they ask us to. And so, you know, people can figure out in a new way how to do that. There's enterprise license agreement and network access fees is the value proposition for them and how we is a business model for us.
Okay.
So we don't want to be in the middle also of payment disputes, contracting disputes, you know, those things happen too. And everybody has their own procurement processes.
Sure. I mean, yeah, and that's ideal. It's just a lot of, especially when you get down to smaller businesses, that's one of the values when, if somebody in India or Spain is doing the work, the hassle of having to send them $500 or $5,000 or whatever, can be a hurdle.
Yeah.
Which is why most platforms, take that on. Not so much that they want the cut, but just because it's a facilitator for the business.
The fundamental philosophical reason why we didn't do it that way and is actually pretty basic. If we're trying to build communities and we're trying to nurture those communities, if I meet you as a result of this platform,
right,
and now I've met you and the platform's taken a fee, now you and me have an incentive to get off the platform,
right?
Because now I don't want to pay that fee,
right?
And there's many, many platforms I've used, and as you're describing, yeah, that do that very thing.
And you have more value in keeping them on the platform than collecting a fee.
Yeah, because we have to find new ways of engaging. And I don't think every single transaction where somebody's taking 2, 5, 10, 15% or something, right, is that way to go.
Agreed. Yeah,
that's just the strategy.
So, I think the technology need, you've lived it and it's clear. And even just in talking now, I can see how articulated big data is, that, the theory of big data and the processing powers supporting big data, I think has exceeded the ecosystem's understanding or ability to absorb and use it and do it right. But to me, the biggest hurdle that you would have is the human hurdle, in that there's already a lot of systems that do some of this.
Yes.
And so you almost have to go figure out whether it's stop using that, start using this, or integrate. But all of that then becomes an extra layer of human activity. And at the core of that, there's the people who are the execs that will get the we'll call it the highest percentage value out of it.
Right.
And folks. But then there's sort of a tail of people who get less and less value out of it. It's more, it becomes a hassle for them because they're more the transactional entering data entry people or whatever. And so to get that whole group of players to change behavior and start to adopt this, is your approach to go in real heavy with a top down
yes
mandate that
not a mandate. I mean, they
desire. Obviously
people have to see the value proposition.
Right.
We worked really hard to design in, what's the value. There's got to be something in it for each stakeholder group.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Or they will not adopt. And so, but for me, and I've been in this space for over a decade, and I have about 30 data mining professional students who are execs who come through my class for the last 5 years. And I really feel like we are at a tipping point of, you have to do things in a different way. Because, if you ever watch TV, you see that the hype cycle is pretty, there's a tremendous amount of hype, and people are rightly asking the questions, well, why can't my company enable this for digital transformation, or why are we struggling with this? And it's a variety of things, including infrastructure, collaboration, data silos, and like human factors.
Yeah.
So it's a collaboration platform for getting the work done. That's a real value proposition.
Right.
And, there's just, article after article and research after research related to, data scientists are getting crushed. Executives can't get, what they're looking for. And then what are the reasons for this? Because there's too many complicated permutations that are,
right,
that are, so it's an orchestration of all those things together. And the other thing is these dynamics are changing every day, mm-hmm, And so we're doing this today but we're doing that tomorrow, or companies are getting purchased by big cloud vendors. So we thought we had this vendor, now we have that vendor. And so why can't we consume from a buffet of analytic providers, mm-hmm, and analytic talent? We're really happy with our core. This is how it works. Good. But maybe I want to keep my eye on the competition. Or maybe as a selling strategy, I need to demonstrate that, my cloud product or my boutique algorithm is more effective than somebody else's,
right,
as a bake-off.
Yeah.
So these are there's all kind of stakeholder related human dynamics that are fascinating. And, we're in a game changer in terms of the companies that figure out how to master this for themselves are going to have a tremendous advantage, in my view.
I agree. And I'm curious now, you have your head around this and you work for one of the bigger companies out there. So the, you know, the decision to do it on your own, you know, to me, this begs for a really good sales team and a really good support team. And you got to kind of come in big because really your ideal spot is bigger. And, you know, sometimes medium is attractive because it's easier to penetrate as if you're, you know, so what's been your sort of thinking between
great question. So, you know, my background, I'm the founder and I'm IT technology, technology background. And so I've hired some great people here in St. Petersburg and in the Tampa area, Morgan Hill Partners. So I energized a management team with Morgan Hill Partners a few months ago, Henneke Design on the social media side. So I'm kind of a, I root for the local home team. You know, I live here now and I moved here 6 months ago and I really like just speaking about the community. I mean, I moved here from San Francisco and you know, I see a lot of things here I really like in terms of the energy and the accessibility of people and the listening of people. And San Francisco is a fabulous place and I, you know, I had a great run there. But at the same time, you know, startups are really hard to do and you need this ecosystem, including academia, to, you know, really pull it together. You know, forums, shared space. I mean, those types of resources are really mature, I'll say. But, you know, I'm a different, you know, I'm closer to the end of my career probably than the beginning, but I'm a boyish attitude.
Perfect time to get a startup going.
So, you know, I just lived a lot of real problematic business problems. So like, I don't have any illusions about how hard this is. Startups are dysfunctional. And one of the reasons why I did it the way I did it too, was because I know this is complicated and you know, I can't run around to a seed investor and expect them to like do this until I prove that that it could be built and done. And so that was part of it too. And I was fortunate to be in a position where I was able to get it stabilized and built. So, you know, so I'm real happy with the resourcing that we are.
And the plan is then to build that sort of, you know, team gravitas to go in and be able to land and support the corporation. And that's where.
Yeah,
you picked a couple. I mean, you could tell you're a good researcher because you picked a couple of our stars in Haneke and you know, the Barnish and crew.
Yeah, well, shout out to those
definitely
guys.
Deserve that. Cool.
Good. Yeah.
So as it sits now, you know, what does the next 6 months hold for you now that the platform's up and what's
the future? Sure. So there's only about 10 or 20,000 things to do there. So you know, we are aggressively selling. We are aggressively doing engaging people, meetings, pilots with, you know, what we're saying to people, it's almost like a no risk kind of thing to do a pilot and to see this in action.
Right.
Okay. And then on the investor side too, I'm ready to blow the company up because I, you know, now I'm in a position where things are stabilized, they work, and, you know, I'm still have, you know, quite a few vendors, but also to build an organization. So that's a process, you know, and it's also, I had a successful startup exit about 20 years ago where I was a CTO. So I've had this ride before. It's exhilarating. It's painful. It's hard. It's all those things. Yeah. And then I went back into corporate America for, you know, 20 years and, you know, and now I'm back and I'm excited to be doing it because it's a different kind of work. It's, you have to, you know, put your pride and ego aside and do everything. That's great. And I'm bringing some more battle scars, if you will, into the process this time. I was a CTO of the organization that we did 20 years ago. And so I, you know, I understand, you know, how it works. And you know, I'm motivated. I'm excited. You know, just very outcome oriented. You have to just be, it's probably the hardest thing, which we're very focused on, is just prioritization. Mm-hmm. There's 1,000 things to do. What are the 5 things we need to do right now, today?
Yeah.
And so being on your show is like one of them.
I better be at the top of the list. I want to finish with a couple of just random questions. Just love to get your perspective coming from San Francisco and, you know, being in a significant distance of Silicon Valley. What do we need more of here in Tampa Bay for startups?
Yeah.
Besides money.
That's a great question. Well, there's I'll maybe frame it this way because I got no criticisms of anything. But you know, ecosystem. You know, that's just all the stuff I was talking about before. Where there's a culture of ecosystem, and you know, I've seen and I've read a lot about what's happened here in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Saw some of your previous podcasts and stuff, and there is an energy here, and that's part of why I'm here. And so that's really exciting. But you know, you need a lot of ideas and many of them fail. And you know, all that support structure between the investors, angel investors, people that listen, academia, shared space, you know, the connectors. I think connector was an official job description out west.
Yeah.
That's actually a real thing.
Yeah.
But also, you know, what I tell you something, the Tampa area, I think just really has going for it right now, which is their ear is to the ground a little bit. You know, I didn't feel that as much. And I don't know if people were too, I want to say, you know, networks get formed and then they sometimes don't branch out. You know, you get insulated. And I've seen this in corporate America too. These are all the people we talk to all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, everybody says they want to break out of the box and innovate and so on and so forth. But it's kind of like, well, that means like I'm going to talk to somebody I've never talked to before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just, you know, I don't know what they're going to say or whether I'm going to like it, but you know, they're going to tell me something that I wasn't thinking about before. So that is something, I'm describing this well, but that is something I think really the area has going for right now. Conferences and, you know, all the other stuff, affordable support fees from vendors who like this space. I mean, if you like, you have to like creating something from nothing, okay,
mm-hmm.
to do this kind of work, which I do. But, you know, it's not like your regular gig, you know, it's a different thing. And, not for everybody.
The thing that I think is true here, but I haven't lived elsewhere, is that if you had to choose, you know, there was sort of a sliding scale between competitive and collaborative. We're pretty heavy leaning towards the collaborative side, you know, whereas I think a lot of other people are, you know, everybody here is still sort of competing for the same dollars. And, but at the same time, I've always, the general sort of base level existence here is people really do want to help people, even if they're competitors.
Yes.
And, it's a much softer, you know, it's a very, very comfortable existence, and maybe you lack some of the, you know, some of the benefits you get from heavy competition and the edges, you know, that drives in people, but, you know, makes for a nicer life, I guess.
It does.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that all comes with, you know, bigger, better, more competitive, but I don't think that's a great environment for startups because all startups need a lot of things, and you know, entrepreneur forums, meetups, you know, all these types of things. Personally, I mean, I'll share a few things from San Francisco I didn't care for, which is I don't think you can. I mean, you know, people do this all the time. I think because it's frankly a little bit of a laziness thing. Having a 30-second stand-up to explain a company,
mm-hmm.
You know, to me, the idea is about 1/8 of 1% of actually making a company go.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the business problem? What's the business model? How you sustain it?
Acquisition.
Who are the customers? All these millions of things. And, you know, standing up in a circle and doing, doing that pitch. I mean, I get it. You know, people are busy and you want to see a lot of flow. But at the same time, you know, listening skills, like, well, what are you really saying here? Do I really understand this business problem? And here's a great company that meets a need.
Right.
You know, that I think there's a certain hunger or desire from people which I see in this area more than I'll say I saw out west. Maybe because people, you know, they've been successful there for a really long time. And that's great too. And so they, you know, they migrate up the food chain, you know, from the seed, from the angels, from the, you know, the real startups,
right.
Which is really sometimes where some of the most fabulous, you know, those people need some ideas and support and they're off to the races, you know, they're, you know, one phone call and it's burn the business plan and pivot and we're off and running. We're doing great. That's really how it works.
Yeah.
You know, it can work that way.
It can. Yeah.
So anyway. Cool.
Well, we're glad you made the move.
Thank you.
And this, when it succeeds, will be a big business because it's filling a big need.
Well, have me back.
Okay, we will
see what happens. Status report.
Cool. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Catalyst publisher Joe Hamilton with Tom Whitmer of Sage Legion. Another startup report from PitchList. A presentation of stpetecatalyst.com.